I would also like to remind you that there will be tea and cookies after this, so that will give you a chance to ask me some more questions and to talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah, and actually, thank you. Actually, you're welcome to ask questions, more questions, because I think this talk has some number of pretty interesting solving problems. So, and also, if you would like to ask some questions during the talk, please don't hesitate to stop me. So this is our joint work. Okay, title is two-dimensional separation and communication complexity through quantum states and distinguishability. And this is a joint work with Julia Kempe, Albert Regev, and Ronald DeWolf. Okay, so I would like to start with some kind of general reasoning why these things are interesting. So, first of all, the model game will be like that. We have three partners: Alice, Bob, and the referee. And the idea is the following: Alice gets some information. It has its input from some source, and Bob gets some other useful information. You know, like what? Now they are allowed, Bob, to send some messages to the referee. And intuitively, the idea is that those messages should, in some way, represent their inputs, carry some information about their inputs, such that the referee would know something about input from Bob, or input to Alice, and input to Bob, just based on the messages which she receives from them. And of course, we want to be efficient in terms of communication, which means if we just think about the amount of information being sent, we want Alice to send to the referee much less than, let's say, number of bits, which is much smaller than the length of x. So less information that is really contained in x. And same for Bob. So one has to send less than he receives. And the goal is, let's say, the meaning of a referee getting some information about x and y is actually the ability of the referee to produce a good answer. Now, what is a good answer is actually defined by underlying whole game. So the whole game, its purpose is to solve relation P. And P is simply some subset of possible triples of x, y, and z, where x equals to Alice, y equals to Bob, z means some answer. Okay, and so P means that some triples are good, some triples are bad. Okay, and so given x and y, the final purpose of all those three guys is to enable the referee to produce Z, which is good, to produce Z, which is in relation P with X and Y. Okay. And so, as I said, we want the communication to be as small as possible. Because, of course, it would be trivial if Alice just sends X to the referee, Bob sends Y to the referee, the referee knows everything, and she can compute everything she wants. So the point is that they should send less. Now, this model in general, this setup where there is no direct communication between Alice and Bob, and they only send message to the third party, this is called simultaneous message passing. Simultaneous standing for this idea that there is no back and forth communication between them. So, and this is the idea of the game as I described it, how it goes. And actually, this model will have several modifications, and most modifications will be sometimes we say that those channels from Alice to the referee are classical. Sometimes we'll say that they are quantum, qubits can be sent. And also, sometimes we'll allow some kind of shape, some kind of dependence between how Alice and Bob behave. So, in some cases, they will share a random coin and so on. So, variations are here. Basic model will be denoted by R with superscript of two lengths. R stands for randomized as opposed to deterministic, which means most protocols can be randomized, but it's classical. So R is classical, communication channels are classical, and actually these two lengths are not very informative in the context of present talk, because all the models will be with those two lengths superscript, meaning simultaneous message passing. First modification is communication with shared randomness, which means Alice and Bob can think about this situation is they can toss a coin, and outcome of the coin is easily observable by both Alice and Bob. Okay, so for free they can share randomness output of any number of random coin flips. Okay, as I mentioned, another modification is quantum communication. Simply same idea, same model. And Alice and Bob, they send quantum messages instead of just classical ones. And of course, prefer you can perform POM on what she receives in order to decide what outcomes. Well, and another modification, if you think about, let's say, quantum world as underlying the whole game, then of course, astronomer scheme would be astronomer in comparison to randomness. Would be to allow two parties share entanglement, share EPR pairs, such that when they before the same messages, they can, let's say, measure or just somehow do some kind of confirmation once there are EPR, once there are halves of EPR pairs in order to produce messages which are sent to their first. So, in some sense, this means that two parties can be entangled. Okay, but it's important that either in the case of randomness or in the case of shared entanglement, actually. They have some correlation, but that correlation does not depend on their actual input. Okay, so here X and Y, for example, is independent from random coin. Okay, if Alice and Bob share some randomness, coin is really random, and it does not depend on X and on Y. Same thing for cosmic entanglement. Somehow entanglement is the same; it does not change depending on what was input. Okay, now, after all the definitions, I would like to say in a few words why this thing is interesting. In some sense, this issue of communication complexity, first, we appear in a slightly different context, the classical setup, because of related to certain world bounds and so on. But I think the main reason why people do care today about quantum or semi-quantum versions of semi-quantum, I mean, something is quantum, proton, quantum, classic communication, quantum, quantum, all those versions, is to be able to compare how powerful different resources like entanglement or quantum communication versus classical communication are in this situation. And actually, this measure, or all these measures of communication complexity, measures I mean, with respect to different relations P, they somehow sit in between purely information theoretical comparison, like Holoband, and computational complexity. Okay, because here, in some sense, we care about how much information should be sent in order to provide some sort of knowledge to the referee in this case. But on the other hand, it's not only about information. The referee, actually, she does not need to know everything about X, everything about Y. She only has to be able to produce that which is in good relation with X and Y. So all those modifications are somehow in between pure informatical and purely computational measures, and that's why they're interesting. Okay. So for example, here it's very easy. It's much easier in this context to say how powerful entanglement is, for example. Okay, because in case in case let's say of quantum computing in general, there are questions how much can be done, let's say with quantum information without entanglement, for example. But it's much less obvious and much to get. It's much less intuitive all those measures than here. Here you can very easily distill. Now I want to see how powerful entanglement is. In the context of this setup, simply you can allow entanglement between those two guys and nothing else. And in some sense, it allows some kind of very direct measure, very direct reasoning about each of quantum resources and so on. So, as I define all those models, I said that, well, entanglement is very relevant in the context of quantum communication, and public coin, it is classical, so it's relevant in the context of classical communication. But actually, if you think about it, there is no reason which would not let us talk about entanglement in the context of classical communication, because two guys, they can be quantum, But when they send messages, they must be obliged to, let's say, perform measurement. And so communication channel is classical. Okay, but they themselves are quantum, they do share a quantum, for example. As well as our case, communication is classical, but two players have to both they share only the, sorry, communication is quantum, but two parties share only classical random coin, which is, and we'll show that, we'll see that it's less powerful than sharing quantum.
Why did you use the superscript
pub? Public coin. Sorry, pub means this for public coin and means entanglement. And nothing means that they are independent and parallel.
So, are we assuming the referee knows then what the point is?
No. So, yeah, usually, well, in classical case, in most of the reasonable models, it would not change that much if referee would know classical coin. In case of quantum, it's not the obvious, but referee does not share anything. So all those superscripts, pub and ant, mean that something is shared between us and both. Referee does not share. So just a couple of formal statements. A communication protocol is simply behavior or a description of behavior of participants referee. How should they react? What should they say in order to every possible input? And for the relation, it's communication costs in given model or all those modifications I mentioned. It's just minimal cost of protocol, which enables referee to produce a good answer with probability at least 2/3. And well, we have usually some freedom in saying. In defining the constant, it should be some constant close to one. Okay, it's not that obvious. Well, it's not totally unimportant, but usually 2/3 is a kind of standard number for that. So we require probability at least 2/3. Because if, for example, if you think about case where referee should only say yes or no, where task is boolean. Then it's clear that constant, the actual value of the constant is not very important because we can amplify it. In the case where a referee can have a number of possible answers, which are all good, it's not that clear what do we exactly mean by amplifying. So constant is not that irrelevant here, but still it's not very important for us. So our result. First, we'll state and prove the quantum state in the distinguishability dilemma as the technical contribution, but from a theoretical point of view, it's not directly related to communication. But that dilemma actually is a technical tool, it's very important, and actually it was the hardest part to do for this result. And we will use this quantum state in the distinguishability dilemma to show two separations in communication of the by separations, I mean showing that one of the models is stronger than the other. Okay. So first communication result is that we exhibit a relation P1, and using our lemma, we prove that well, actually, lower bound does not depend. Sorry, this thing does not depend on the lemma only that lower bound depends on the lemma. But we prove that. This relation P1 can be solved in logarithmic amount using logarithmic number of classical bits in this case in the model of classical communication with shared random coins, with public coin. It cannot be solved in polylogarithmic time, actually it requires n to the cubic root of n. Command of communication in the quantum model, but without shared randomness. So in some sense, this result shows how important shared randomness can be. And actually, it was known before that randomness can be important. It was not known before that the model of classical communication with shared randomness is much stronger than the model of classical communication without shared randomness. Okay, but our contribution is that for separation P1, even quantum communication without shared randomness is much weaker, actually exponentially weaker, than classical communication, but where we allow shared randomness. That's our first result. And second result is in some sense of similar flavor, but now we show that sorry, So actually we showed that classical communication where we allow entanglement complexity of the problem P2 is logarithmic. And a quantum complexity even if we do allow shared random calling classical but not shared entanglement, it is still high. It's n over log q. So in some sense, this thing shows that entanglement can be much more powerful than shared coin. And as before, in some sense, you consider the weakest possible model, which has entanglement, its communication is just classical. And the strongest possible model, which does not have entanglement, this model has classical random coin, a shared random coin, and quantum communication. And still, for our relation P2, entanglement allows the classical communication to do exponentially more efficiently than quantumly without sharing entanglement of this shared random second result.
What's it, Q, do you mean n over log n to the one third? Q root?
Oh, sorry. It's Q. Thank you. Sorry. Yeah, of course, always you can, you can solve anything, just as I said. If L is 10. Okay, probably I should say, sorry, not say that. N means length of the input. Okay, you don't say that. So, of course, you can solve anything in linear amount of communication. Just as I said from the beginning, L is can send her input to referee, Bob sends his input to referee, and referee knows everything that comes to just linear amount. So in N, anything can be solved. And in general, it's considered, let's say, it's usual to say that if you have polylogarithmic communication complexity, it is efficient. If you have something like inverse polynomial like here, it's considered to be non-efficient. So our first operation, model of classical communication with shared randomness versus quantum communication without anything shared. So it was known before that for some relation, the first model is exponentially stronger than the second model. So efficiently solvable, as I said, means a polylogarithmic solution. So in some cases, in some situations, this model of quantum communication without anything shared is exponentially more efficient than the model of classical communication with a shared random coin. And what we show is separation in the opposite direction. So we show that in other cases, it can happen that model of classical communication with shared randomness is exponentially more efficient than quantum communication without anything shared. Okay, and actually our protocol is it's better than just being correct for probability 2/3. It's actually zero error, which means our protocol can sometimes say that no, but whenever it outputs answer always correct. Okay, so it's stronger than general requirements. And so we conclude that these two models are comparable, and as far as I know, this is first known result of this kind in communication complexity. Well, if we unless we consider some kind of not very natural models for this, in some sense, natural definitions of communication models, this is first example of two models which are comparable. Okay, because let's say for most of the classical models, we know all they are equivalent or one is stronger than the other, and in this case, in some circumstances, one is stronger, in other circumstances, the other is stronger. Okay. Now another result, another reason to care about this separation is that there is the known simulation that has been shown by Yao that any protocol from a model of classical communication which are randomness, it can be simulated by another protocol in the model of quantum communication without anything shared, and that new protocol will be exponentially longer. And it was open until now whether this simulation is efficient or not. In other terms, whether we must pay that exponential price if you want to simulate in quantum communication without anything shared, a protocol from classical communication which you are calling, is it necessary that new protocol is exponentially more expensive, has exponentially higher cost? And of course, our result means that it is essential, that in general case, we cannot do better, simply because for our relation, it has efficient, which means part logarithmic solution in that model, but solution in that model is cubic root of n, which is exponential worse. Okay. So I would just briefly, I'm going to prove our results, but I just as an example, I'm not going to prove the lower bound. But as an example, let me define our fourth relation, P1. It's very simple, actually. And it's defined like that. Alice receives an input, X, which is any n-bit string. Bob receives two inputs. One input is Y, which is also any n-bit string. The other input is S, which is n-bit long string 2, but number of one, this means just number of ones which S contains, Hamming weight. So Hamming weight of S is n half, which means exactly one half of the entries in S are ones and one half are zeros. And well, requirement output, referee must produce an output which can be interpreted as saying, well, I know what is the ice bit on the both sides. So referee says, I know what is the ice bit of Alice, X of I means ice bit in her opinion. And so I know what is the ice bit of Bob, of Y, Y equals Bob. But the requirement, the restriction is that corresponding I must be in some sense permitted by S. So we can interpret S can be interpreted as a mask. Okay, those I's for which S has entry 1, and we know that's a better on top of possible indices. So those indices for which S has value 1 are permitted. Those indices for which S has value 0 are not permitted, and so they cannot be put out according to the definition of our relation. And actually, you probably feel that S is the only non-trivial thing about the whole game, because otherwise, you know, Alice and Bob before the game started, they could say, okay, let's really always produce the output first bit. Okay, so then Alice can just send X1 and Bob can send Y1 to the referee, and that would be the end of the game. But of course, if they don't know a priori before the game starts, if they don't know what S is, of course, they cannot fix the specific bit, because that specific bit can be forbidden by the actual value for the price. But, as you can probably guess, according to what I just said, if Alice and Bob can randomly pick an integer index I between 1 and n, and anything including 1 and n, then they can do the following. Alice sends value of the bit I to the referee together with her I's bit of her input, so X sub I. And Bob sends I's bit of both his inputs, so Y sub I and S sub I to the referee. And now you can see that the referee knows everything she needs with respect to I. Okay, so if S sub I equals 1, that means the corresponding triple I, X sub I, Y sub I would form a put out according to our relation. And so if S sub I equals 1, the referee is able to produce the correct output. And this happens to probability 1 half, because we know that Hamming weight of S is n over 2, which means a random I has S sub I equal to 1 with probability 1 half. And so, of course, because, and this protocol is, as I said, it's TP0 error. Because referee, if S sub I equals 0, referee knows that she doesn't know what to say, so she said, I don't know. She never says something which is wrong. And we can repeat this protocol two times in parallel, I mean, of course, because we don't have those iterations, just one, two, for two different indices, like I and J perform this game. And then error probability is reduced to square of 1/2, which is 1/4. And we can reduce it to any constant.
Actually, so I just want to point out on your previous slide, you have this statement saying the quantum simulation takes on the public coin protocol is exponential, right? It's exponential in the communication, but not in n.
Yes, sorry, yes. I mean exponential longer. So I mean exponentially bigger than corresponding classical, I think.
Well, so also because there's a classical protocol that will simulate this public coin protocol, but it will be exponential in, you know, meaning it'll be square root n times communication complexity. Right, so it's you see where I'm getting. So if you have a classical public coin simultaneous message protocol, takes C bits of communication, then you can simulate it classically without public randomness in C times square root n approximately. So that's also exponential.
But that's like different. I'm talking about all these results in the context of trying to be efficient. In the sense, as I said before, trying to be polylogical. So in some sense, I would say, let's say, we don't care about anything which is not polylogical. Polylogical is bad. So anything which is more than polylogical is not efficient. So from that point of view, it's like, it shows that Yao simulation cannot be, in general, cannot be done more efficiently. You always lose the expansion. Okay, so this is a classical protocol. And I will not be talking about corresponding lower bound for quantum case, but I would like to say that actually the whole proof is pretty simple. And the only non-simple part of the whole proof of lower bound is the tensor lemma, which I will mention later, state indistinguishability lemma. The rest of the analysis is very standard and simple. Because you can see that in some sense this relation is very simple, so it's not complicated. It's different. Okay, so just as a result, using our state, I'll talk about it later, we are able to show that a quantum computation complexity for relation P1 is at least square root of n. And probably that is not optimal. Probably the optimal value would be square root of n. But as I said, from point of view efficiency from the bottom, and a cubic root of n is bad. Second result, very briefly. In this case, I will not even define P2 because it's kind of a little bit more complicated definition. But we show for perceptron relation P2 that it can be efficiently solvable in classical communication where we have shared complement. And by efficiently solvable, I mean logarithmic communication complexity, and it cannot be solved efficiently in the model of quantum communication with shared random coin. More specifically, communication complexity is n over log n to the degree 1/3. And in fact, in this case, what we get for as an on the positive side, a protocol which we extract for this relation. And the model of classical communication with shared complement, it is exact. So it's even better than zero error. In case of zero error protocol, I said that we can sometimes, referee can sometimes say, I don't know. In this case, she never does that. She always knows. Error is zero, actually. She shows. Then I'd like to talk about quantum state distinguishing and our indistinguishability dilemma, which is probably the most interesting part from technical point of view of the results. So suppose, consider this very classical, right? I mean classical in terms of well known for a long time. problem, we have a quantum system, and we know that the quantum system can be in one of two possible a priori known states. And the student, or some observant student, he wants to decide what is the state. So the goal is to perform some measurement such that he will be able to say, well, I know state is A or state is B. Okay. And now there are several sub-cases, and one of them is, well, probably it has been considered before, but best of our knowledge, it has not been known before what happens. So first case is understood. It's very simple. It's this case is actually solidizing the whole basic quantum information process under Gaussian. Understood the case that student can be wrong, and there is no limitation. So student can always guess. Okay? And in this case, even if student has no knowledge at all about what is happening, it cannot harm if just student picks a coin, or tosses a coin and picks a random number, say 0 or 1, because it's one of two possible states, and says state is 0, state is 1. So it never harms to give the answer, even if nothing is known. And in that case, of course, the goal of distinguishing an unrestricted model is to give the right answer with probability as high as possible. And of course, in this case, probability of giving the right answer is at least 1/2. Because even if nothing is known, student guesses itself or has 0 or 1. It's correct, it's probability of 1/2. Okay. So, second case is actually the new case. Is bound error case. The point is that now student does not always, I mean, probably will not always give an answer. In some situations, student will say, I don't know. And the requirement is that wherever student says something except I don't know, wherever student produces a meaningful answer, he must be correct. His probability, he can be wrong with probability of epsilon. Epsilon is usually constant. In our context, it will be a constant. So there are some constant, small constants. I'm thinking about one, for example. Whenever a student says something, he must be correct with probability of at least 2/3. But he can say I don't know. And third case is same as bounded error, but epsilon equals 0. Whenever a student says anything, he must be always correct, otherwise I don't know. And, well, probably those two cases, I'm not sure that either of them has been considered before, but actually for zero error case, it's pretty trivial to see how what happens there. It's pretty easy to see what is the best thing which can be done. And in bounded error case, it turns out to be more problematic case. And actually that was our state indistinguishability dilemma is going to be about. Okay, lemma says the following thing. First of all, okay, so suppose probably should move that down. Sorry. So suppose we have two boxes, okay, and according to one of possible requirements for state distinguishing, suppose that the best, the highest chance, suppose our student must be in zero error setup. Whenever a student says something, it always must be correct. And now we have two black boxes, okay, and the requirement is to say what is here and what is there. And two black boxes, each of them can contain one or two possible states, and those states are not correlated. There's no entanglement, no classical correlation, nothing. And the question is, if probability to make a guess here and be always correct is at most A, and probability to guess what is here and to be always correct is B, then what is the best probability to say what is here and what is there and still to be correct? So what's the best probability to simultaneously guess correctly what is in the bound boxes? Okay. And in the case of zero error, it's pretty easy to see that actual probability is close to A times B. It can be at most 4 times AB. And so that will be easier. But now, if you ask the same question, but requirement is that student must be inbound to our model. So whenever a student says something, it must be correct probability at least 2/3. That is hard to obtain bound of what can be the highest probability of making a guess for the both boxes simultaneously. So this sort of, this is why it's called tensor, sometimes I call it tensor lemma, because we want some kind of tensor statement about how hard is it to distinguish simultaneously what is here and there, where our setup is bounded error. So whenever something is claimed, that must be correct for being at least 2/3. Okay, so the lemma is the following. If you consider those two boxes, and the probability of undescriptive distinguishing of the quantum states sigma 1 from sigma and sigma 2 is at most 1/2 + 8. And the answer to the highest answer probability for constant error distinguishing of states rho 1 from rho 2 is at most b, then there exists a constant. It might be another constant, but it's still some constant, such as the answer probability in the case when maximum error permitted is epsilon, the constant. So the maximum distinguishing probability is a times b. If you look at this lemma, you can see that it's a little bit weaker than what I said, because our assumption is that, well, rho 1 and rho 2, our assumption is something about distinguishability of rho 1 from rho 2 in the bounded error case. Constant bound error is compounded by constant, and that's a thing. And our conclusion is about distinguishability in bounded error, that's what we need. But assumption about sigma 1 versus sigma 2 is a kind of stronger, okay? Because if we look back at our models, you can see that unrestricted is, let's say, if you say something is not distinguishable in unrestricted model, that is the strongest possible statement about undistinguishability, okay? This thing, if we say something is undistinguishable in bounded error case, that would be much weaker statements. And actually, we were not able, we don't know how, to obtain a lemma if our assumption about sigma 1 versus sigma 2 would also be made in bounded error case. Now, fortunately, in this case, it is good enough for our needs. But from the point of view of quantum information, it's definitely a very important problem to obtain some kind of similar result where your assumption about sigma 1 or sigma 2 is also made in terms of bounded error state distinguishing. Okay, and by the way, if that could be done, probably, as I mentioned, we get our bound of n to the power 1 over 3, and we believe that the optimum is square root n, then probably if this lemma could be stated in terms of a bounded error distinguishability of sigma 1 or sigma 2, that will automatically give a stronger lower bound. We'll get quantum information or quantum communication collecting out the most square root of n. As I said, it's not very interesting because any root of n is considered inefficient, so that's good enough for our needs. But also, in terms of our result, improvement of lemma would still give some improvement of our result. And of course, it's interesting for its own sake. So now one small counterintuitive example. Probably would show that it's not very simple to do those kind of tensoring arguments and tensoring lemmas for distinguishability. Simply suppose that instead of distinguishing elements, instead of saying what is I and what is J, if we are given a tensor product sigma I tensor rho j, we just want to identify what is the XOR of I XOR j. So in other words, we want to distinguish the case where I equals 1, sorry, XOR, I mean, sorry, it should be like 0 versus 1, in order for XOR to make sense. So in other words, I want to know whether I and j are the same or are they different. Okay, this is what I want to know. And in this case, tensor lemma simply does not hold. An example is very, very simple. Okay, so let's alpha, p, and beta, they both just 0, and alpha 1, beta 1, and alpha 2 and beta 2, they are very close to 0, okay? They have only delta far from being 0. And it's easy to see that success probability in unrestricted distinguishing of alpha 1 from of this mixture alpha 1 from alpha 2 is 1/2 plus setup of Bell square. Okay, and the unsampled ability for constant error distinguishing of beta 1 to beta 2 mixtures is theta of delta square. So this exactly corresponds to the requirement of our lemma. Okay, the only difference is that our goal, what we're trying to do for tensor, is a little bit weaker than what we had previously. And it happens that unsampled probability for constant error identification of corresponding XOR, again, like XOR, I mean, whether I equals J or not, it's still theta of delta square instead of probably 2 to the expected delta to the power of 4. So in this case, lemma, I mean, this weaker version of lemma simply would not hold. Okay, so now open problems. The first open problem is related to our corrections for communication complexity. The problem is the following. We have done our operations using relations, meaning that problem we wanted to solve for every possible pair of inputs for the referee, there were more than one choice or several choices of answers. For the referee, such an answer will be considered as good. Okay, so for every possible pair of XY of inputs to Alice and Bob, the referee has a number of different choices, and all of those choices would be okay. What about functions? Can we do a similar separation based on some problem, which is functional problem, which means for every possible pair of inputs to Alice and Bob, there is only one response, which is considered good by the referee. And, well, by partial functions, I mean that it's okay if we say that some pairs of inputs, some pairs of X and Y inputs of two Alice and Bob never appear. Okay, we forbid some of the input, or in other terms, we don't care what referee would say in response to those forbidden pairs. And that's a question, what about total functions? Total function means that all possible combinations of X's and Y's can appear in real life. We do define what is the right answer for every possible pair of inputs. And, well, it is believed, and I think there are probably good reasons to believe, that for partial functions, similar separations can be obtained. And for total functions, probably they cannot be obtained, simply because for the case of total functions, it looks to be much more easy to think about. And for example, for some more restricted, not as general as those cases, as those models which I consider here, but some more restricted models, there are no bounds for communication complexity of total functions, and those bounds become sometimes in terms of VC dimension and stuff like that. And it seems that in that case, actually, lots of models are very similar to each other. For example, quantum versus classical is, at least in the case of simultaneous method passing, it seems to be pretty close to each other and what can be done. And difference is it most polynomial, so complexity for classical can be, let's say, most. Some polynomial in terms of the complexity of quantum commutation, which means if we have polylogarithmic for one model, we'll probably have polylogarithmic for other model too. Of course, if similar bounds can be obtained for these more general models, we don't know that. And second open problem I'd like to mention, actually there are more, but this is fine. So, as a matter, it's just thrown a form, as I said. We make somehow weaker, we prove something weaker than the best possible form of quantum state indistinguishability dilemma. So is it possible to prove, is it true that same holds for the case if we do only, if we only make assumptions about bounded error distinguishability in each one of those black boxes individually? We don't know that. Okay, that's, thank you.
Questions? I have a question. Can you go back to the slide of the state and distinguishability dilemma?
Mm-hmm. This one,
No, the one before it.
Okay, so I want to make sure I understand what order of AD means correctly here, because you don't have, are you thinking of, you sort of have a family of these different problems, or are you saying, you know, what we're going to do is simply take A, or we're going to have one problem, and A is simply going to be a parameter of a system that I can take to you know, to zero, and B is going to be another parameter I can take to zero, as sort of as a black box kind of thing, and then I can calculate this, or what does order AD mean?
Okay, thank you. It's part of the, actually a very good question, and actually order makes sense, well, not for certain degree of what kind of order. Order is very, it's very straightforward, what meaning it has in the context of our application, in the context of those communication problems, where n is growing, and it's actually less of n. So actually, A and B are decreasing. So think about A and B as being close to 1 over n, where n grows. Okay, and so actually the result is simply that here we have probabilities of most some constants independent on A and B times A times B. Okay, so the idea is that A and B are decreasing. Constant, those constants which say how good you must perform for sigma 1, for sigma 2, for sigmas, for rows, and for the tensor, those constants are fixed, they do not change. So, things which are changing is A and B, they are decreasing.
Is the dimension of the states also going up for the fan, or is it just the states themselves will be increased?
No. Dimension, in this case, let's say again, if we're thinking about constant appearing here, think by O, dimension does not appear as well.
What kind of extension of these lemmas would be very interesting for you for the communication complexity?
As I said, we'd like to have to be able to make some statements if our assumption about sigma 1 and sigma 2 is made in terms of bounded error indistinguishability instead of unrestricted indistinguishability. Mm-hmm. Okay, I mean, as I said, I think that case it would be much more interesting from the point of view of quantum information. Because in the context of our result, it would give a little bit stronger separation. But, let's say, in terms of, we say that communication class consists of set of problems efficiently solvable in certain model, that would not give a new separation between communication classes. Okay, because and a cubic root versus square root, same from our point of view, just the past. But it would give improvement, and for example, and I know for sure this problem has been considered much before our research. And people thought about it in other contexts. And actually, this was the hard part of our work. It took us a long, because previous version, it was a first similar result had been a version where we could only make statements about hardness of our communication problems in zero error case. Mm-hmm. And it was exactly the problem, just in this case. Okay? So the problem was that conclusion which we were able to make about the distinguishability of the tensor of those two boxes together, we could only make it in terms of epsilon being equal to zero, just about zero error. And in order to be able to extend it to bounded error case, actually we had to express those optimal, let's say, it's possible to express what is the best measurement in order to obtain some bounded error distinguishing system of measurements in terms of semi-definite programming, okay? And technically, it's a reason why, in this case, why we split sigmas to be one. Sorry, why assumption here which we make about sigmas is in terms of understood distinction is actually we prove our lemma in terms of row one and row two being mixtures, and sigma one and sigma two being pure states. Okay. Because in case of pure states, it's very easy to express what is distinguishing probability, okay? And so what we do, we start with one semi-definite program and one pretty easy form of distinguishability for sigmas, and then we make inclusion about another semi-definite program. Okay, and technically we were not able to start with two semi-data programs and then conclude that was much harder technically. That is the main problem.
Another question. Is there a result for some kind of, you know, N-fold tensor product or something like that? Have you tried generalizing it that way?
You mean more than two?
Yeah.
Well, I think probably you might just general for Weimar. Well, yeah, for example, yeah, but that would be a good question. That would be another reason to think about general relations as Lemma. Because if you have Lemma in terms of rhos and sigmas being indistinguishable in bound curve case, then you can easily generalize Lemma to many guys. In this case, it does not, I mean, I don't see how. Because, I mean, you can, if you every time pause a pair of states which about them or something in terms of, or like sigma 1 and sigma 2, in terms of unbounded indistinguishability, then of course you can generalize. But you cannot have more and more assumptions about a bounded error, because here for sigmas you need strong assumptions. Yeah, so for example, yeah, just being able to generalize to more is another good reason for Lemma. And by the way, in that case, I think it might be pretty give like new nice results, like separations of communication models where I have more than two parts communicating. Because actually I think problem wrong, but well, I can hardly think about any communication complexity result for quantum communication where I have more, probably there are some but not many, where I have more than two parts. Classically such models, such setups can be considered where I have more than two parties communicating. Partly, I mean, in this case, referee is not a part. Let's say, wrong parties. Quantumly, I don't know of any result of that. So, yeah.
So, you mean a lower bound?
I mean, lower bound.
Any more questions? Well, I'm going to thank the speaker again, please. And I remind you all, there should be cookies and coffee right outside in the bistro. Please partake in that, ask more questions to the speaker, et cetera.
How did... Oh, okay. I see what's going on. I turned off. Oh, right.